One of my subjects in high school was history. I remember learning about the transatlantic slave trade and that most of the captives were from Central and West Africa. They were transported to the Americas to work in plantations as slaves. I remember our history teacher telling us about the inhuman conditions on the slave ships, which caused disease outbreaks and deaths of many slaves. The transatlantic slave trade, along with many other things I learned then, was nothing more than information I had to master to pass my exams. 16 years later, as a 30-year-old Zimbabwean woman, I had the opportunity to visit a country in West Africa, Ghana. My work in Ghana saw me traveling from Accra, the capital, to the Cape Coast. There, I visited the Elmina and Cape Coast castles. These castles have a long history of being controlled by different people. What was particularly interesting was how the castles became dungeons to trade human beings as slaves. I joined a tour around the formerly thriving slave trade centers. This time, it was just not an exercise of information collection as it had been for the 14-year-old me in high school. It was an experience that no history teacher could ever teach, stimulating involuntary Pan-Africanist responses in me. As I walked through the dungeons where female and male slaves were detained, I could almost feel, smell, and hear the pain of people who were once locked up in these poorly ventilated, dark, damp, and smelly dungeons. These captives were not just information in my history lessons. They were real people with real personalities and real lives violently disrupted by the slave trade. I felt sad. I felt hurt. I felt afraid. I felt a cocktail of emotions. I felt the hopelessness that the captured men and women must have felt as they walked through the door of no return to waiting slave ships. Afterwards, while I was still grappling with my feelings, I watched the fishermen, their nets, their boats, and the still blue ocean stretching into the distance outside the door of no return at the Cape Coast Castle. The tour guide beckoned us to return into the castle. But before he did, he pointed up to the door of no return and said it had been renamed to the door of return. These were just the words I was yearning to hear, and I felt hope.
Important is really telling the story in your own voice and in your own way. So I didn't hire Crystal Odison, for example, to do the voiceover for me.
Sound effects, which you can also download for free. you can use a tool called Audacity, and that's free, so you can download it off the internet and it's free. So basically, you can use a computer that has a microphone somewhere in it and record your voice straight into your computer. Or you can have a digital recorder. You can also record your voice on your cell phone.
And photographs
from your cell phone. There is some moves, like I've got a BlackBerry, and there is a tool on BlackBerry to put the pictures together in a sort of a video. The technology grows every day. You just need to figure out how much money have you got, how much time have you got, and what are the skills of your participants. So some people are new computer users, they're much more comfortable on a cell phone, so figure that out. Make some practical decisions and find the tools that you need to do it. Technology is limitless. People are not. And neither is our budgets. So you're going to need to find a match between those things. But I think anybody who spoke today can give some feedback. Type in digital storytelling into a Google search engine. You can find all kinds of things. There's the Digital Story Center in the US. That's the people who originally came to South Africa that represented us through. There's the UCT trainers. There is also a really useful website called tacticaltech.org. And they have toolkits that you can download free software from. So do a little exploring and play around with the technology yourselves. And once you get familiar with technology, you can enter away. But keep in mind all of the things that we spoke around, counseling and supporting people who participate. The use of the stories is important to think through beforehand and make sure you're respectful of everybody's voice.
Yeah, that might be nice too. But one of the things that I was thinking, because I also feel that, and it's like, and of course you don't want to feel as bad. But those who are responsible for the violence don't want us to think about it either. And the levels of, yeah, so these one coming as perpetrators can get off free. Are they going to think about it again?
No.
They don't want anyone else to think about it again. They don't want to think. But there's a way in which, as activists and building a movement, this is not just any kind of building a movement, it's about an ordinariness. These are ordinary stories. They're ordinary. They are unique. They are profound. But that's what the ordinary is, eh? That's what the ordinary is. And how to listen and stay. For me, that is such a precious political skill. And sometimes people call it a skill about healing. But for me, it's a political skill. And sometimes I don't want to listen, and sometimes. But it's like, how to listen and you don't run. You listen and you don't run from yourself. You don't run from the other person. You know how it happens. I listen to a lot of stories about people who've experienced rape, and one of the very frequent things that people say is they don't want to tell people, because as soon as they tell, people look at them differently. It's like they stop being who they are and they become the raped person. It's like they get boxed, and it's about not listening to them. They're still exactly who they were. Exactly, exactly, exactly. More of them, in fact, is there, with more to say and more to reveal. So I really wanted to thank you for bringing the stories, for asking us to sit with them. We didn't. Maybe some of us felt, or some of us disassociated a bit. Then our hearts got lighter. We loved your shoes. And we thought about all sorts of things. And it's like you sort of start to feel the feelings move. And you realize that this is what an embodied politics is like. You're allowed to have feelings. You're allowed to have them. And that you can build strategy and activism and tools on them and make connections across class, across race, across language, across countries. But and it's tiny. Each little one is tiny. It's like a little pixelated thing. It's a thing. You know how e-images are made out of those little dots? That's us. That's very cool. So thank you to Sam, and to Jenny, and to Serena, and to Tosh, and to Irma, and to the whole of Sarah Department. Swift for coming, and for AGI people coming, and for Zaki Barton people coming, small people, big people. And I hope that we'll be able to do this again. And you who came, who heard about it.